Welcome to Global Leader Radio, sponsored by the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University, discussing ideas that matter with people who care. Now here's your host, Director of Business Development and Instructor of Management for the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University, Alvin Miles.
Happy Tuesday and welcome to another edition of Global Leader Radio, the show with a particular focus on those individuals and organizations doing an exceptional job of identifying, attracting, developing, and retaining high-potential talent. And the purpose of our show is to engage in conversations that highlight our guests, educate our learning community, and add value to all those who seek to optimize both their leadership and their development. So we achieve this purpose by providing our learning community with key takeaways to include resources and advice that have led to the personal and professional success of our guests. And we've got a good one today. So today we discuss leadership with a focus on volunteer organizations. And so with that overview, we welcome today's guest, someone I consider to be an expert at leading large volunteer organizations, Tino Montella.
Oh, thanks. It's great to be here, Alvin.
Yeah, so Tino joined TAG as the organization's new president in September of 2004, and he's got over 20 years of experience leading two of the nation's most prestigious volunteer-driven organizations. That would be the National Arthritis Foundation and the YMCA of Metropolitan Chicago. So as president and CEO of these two multifaceted and I would imagine extremely complex charities, he spearheaded agendas that led to the development of innovative new services, resulting in significant membership growth. So in addition, Mantella's track record reflects impressive results in fundraising, advocacy, and economic development. So since coming to TAG, Tino has worked with a team of dedicated volunteers and staff to help build a prestigious board made up of, about 60 technology stakeholders?
Yeah, we're up to about 65 now.
Wow. And and he's grown membership by more than 500%. And he's added a series of programs and services that support TAG's overall vision. So Mantella is a member of the boards of Venture Atlanta Coalition Incorporated, TAG Education Collaborative, the Tech College Foundation Board, the Chambers of Commerce in North Fulton and Georgia, and on the advisory board of the Atlanta Metropolitan Chamber of Commerce. So, Tino, welcome to Global Leader Radio.
Well, thanks. It's my pleasure to be here. I've been looking forward to the opportunity to have a conversation with you.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. So how are you today?
I'm doing great.
You look like $1 million.
And it's not that late in the day yet, so I've got a long way to go still. But
Early. I love that.
Been a busy day already.
Well, good. So what time does your day normally start?
You know, usually if it's a good day, I'm usually up about 4 o'clock. And I go in and get a workout because if I do it late in the day, I it's hard to do. So 4:30, I'm at the gym, and then I'm in the car going to work about 6:30 usually. Okay. And then the days, depending on how it goes, maybe 7 o'clock at night, unless there's a dinner like there was last night where it was a little later.
Very good. So that gives us a little
long
bit of insight
days
into the man behind the leader. So,
workaholic.
I'll tell you. Well, tell us a little bit about Tino Montella. Start with your original birthplace / home and a little bit about your work experience and take us up to the present.
Well, I was born in snow country in upstate New York, around Syracuse, New York, in a little town called Cortland, New York, about 30 miles south of Syracuse. And great place to grow up. Not necessarily a lot of work there once you do grow up, but I spent my first 18 years there. Then I went on to Temple University in Philadelphia. At that time, I was interested in sports, so I was recruited to play football there, but I ended up with a wrestling scholarship, so I had to pick one or the other because the weights are quite a bit different in those two sports. One I had to be 220, and the other I had to be 167 pounds. So since I had a scholarship for wrestling, I went that direction. My first good leadership decision. Met my wife in Philadelphia and started out in a career in the Park District, actually. Somebody came to the school. I wasn't sure what I wanted to do, and they were a recruiter. And one of my friends said, hey, you should go meet with this guy. He's got a job. So went for my first real interview and lucked out and got the job. And I ended up being the Recreation Bureau Chief for the city of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, which is state capital.
That?
Oh, boy, that was a long time ago. So I would say that was about 1978.
Cool.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah. So I did that for a while and went and became a director of Park District in outside of Philadelphia, so back kind of to my second home. Mm-hmm. And after that, I was recruited into the YMCA and spent the next 20 years actually working in different YMCAs in the country. Ended up in Chicago for 10 years, which was a great, great experience. And from there, moved here to Atlanta to be the head of the Arthritis Foundation and did that for a bit of time, and then shifted over to Technology Association of Georgia for the last 8 years. So it's it's been a good run.
Well, very good. So thank you for taking us up through the present there. So
it was a short history.
And that's okay. Yeah. You probably put a lot of experiences into that little short few minutes.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about TAG. So what is TAG, or the Technology Association of Georgia, and what is its vision?
Well, we're a leading trade association for the technology industry, and we're not a state organization. We're a private, not-for-profit organization. Our goal is to educate, promote, influence, and unite the technology community, and we do have goals around each of those areas. The bottom line is we want to help people and companies that are here, and we want to make Georgia a great place so it can become one of the top five states for technology in the
destinations
nation.
Destinations, yeah. Right?
One of the top five states for total number of technology companies, mm-hmm. amount of technology revenue that's produced in this particular state. Right now, 17% of the GDP for the state of Georgia is in technology. So a lot of people don't recognize that it's as significant as it is. So that's one of the things that we've been preaching here. So, but it's a great organization. It's one of the largest now in North America in terms of technology organizations, and we've really been fortunate. Some of my friends are in some of the tougher association industries like construction and house building right now. So I've been blessed to be in the technology industry, right place at the right time.
Understood. So when did you originally decide to pursue this line of work? Because, of course, we heard in your very condensed bio your thoughts. You know, it sounded like it was kind of fortuitous. Somebody said, hey, you might need to go there because of
that.
A job.
Yeah.
But you stayed there.
I did. I think my makeup is I like the idea of helping people in some way, mm-hmm. but I also like running a business. So I have to find things that kind of accomplish both of those opportunities for me. And when you really start to look at things in life, there's not a great number of opportunities where you can feel really good about doing both of those. There's some, use an example, I worked in the Park District, it was a little more government-oriented.
Okay.
And nothing wrong with that other than, you know, I always felt like decisions weren't being made from a business standpoint because there was a lot of political pressures. I mean, we see it today in the nation and locally as well. So even though I was doing well mm-hmm. in that industry, performing well, you know, I think reviews were all good. But for me, it was like, okay, you know, I want to do something else. So when I fell into the Y, I thought, well, this would be great because the Y is a tremendous organization, one of the largest nonprofits in the world. And Chicago was actually the largest in the world at the time. So it was a great opportunity to do that. But when I went into the Y, I liked it because they really do try to run it like a business with the philosophy that if you run a nonprofit like a business, you're going to be able to have more impact on people's lives.
Greater influence.
Yeah, there's a lot of great charities out there, but if they're sort of totally affixed on, you know, how we're going to help people and they don't have the other side of the equation in terms of how we're going to get the funding, how we're going to build a board, how we're going to develop strategies. You know, we talk to a lot of people, and they want to help people. I mean, they're passionate about that. You know a lot of them, as I do.
Absolutely.
And great people, but maybe for some organizations, it's not, you know, they don't have that business acumen. So I'd like the opportunity to do both. And with the Y, it gave me that opportunity. And I was fortunate in organizations like nonprofits like the YMCA, you have to move a little bit to move up. So I've had a number of different experiences. I was in Philadelphia and then New Haven, Connecticut, and then outside of New York City, New Jersey, and then to Chicago. So stints at each of those ended up, I set a goal of hitting being one of the top Ys in the country before I was 40. So at about 39 and a half, I just made it under the wire and ended up getting the Chicago job, which was great. A lot of people felt like I didn't jump through all the flaming hoops of fire to get to that job, but it was I think it was a great experience there and a great organization. Usually when you're in an organization like the Y, you don't leave. You stay there for a career. So I think the next surprise to the Y folks was that I was looking
to do something else.
Yeah, because I wanted to have a different experience. So you can take those experiences in any nonprofit, I think, and exchange them just like good business people can. If you can take it, do it in one area, you can do it in another. So, you know, I was in a human service organization and then moved to a health charity and then to a technology organization. And technology, in some people's mind, would be a bit of a stretch. My son, when I first got the job, he goes, "Dad, you can't even operate the computer. How are you running the Technology Association of Georgia?" So he was fabricating a little bit, but he wasn't stretching it that much at the time. So fortunately, I had other skills that were able to adapt into the job.
Well, you're a businessman.
Yeah, you have to run it like a business,
yeah.
And I think people respect that. So,
yeah,
and
absolutely.
You have to surround yourself with people that know a lot more than you do about the industry.
So which comes first for you? Is it the business aspect or is it the crusade? And the crusade is my word, not yours.
Yeah. You know, for me, it's the business aspect. So
okay.
I feel like if I can apply business principles to a variety of nonprofits, I'm still feeling like I'm accomplishing what I want to do in life.
And still feel fulfilled at the same time.
Feel fulfilled, yeah. And I know, and you know as well, there's other people that really go for the passion first, and then they apply the business principles. Either way is great. It's just, you know, if somebody says, well, you know, you worked in the YMCA, you worked in arthritis, you worked in technology, do all those fulfill you? And the answer is yes, because I get to apply the business principles. I get to see people being helped. Technology is a little different because you're not having as much opportunity, at least I'm not, to work with like youth that are underprivileged, that sort of thing. But I can fulfill that other ways. And now we have a charity that we've had for a number of years that's growing called TAG Education Collaborative, which is our 501c3.
Okay.
And so our goal there is to get kids excited about math, science, technology, and engineering. So STEM. So that makes me feel good that we can apply some of the things to that and really try to stimulate that area because, as we both know, there's all kinds of projections. We have a shortage in that area. So by 2018, one projection just in Georgia is we're going to need another 211,000 STEM-ready employees.
Wow.
Yeah, and there's not that many kids going into high school and coming out that are looking for careers in science, technology, engineering, and math.
Yeah, and so you're quite a visionary, too, because you see the wave before it comes, perhaps, because now the federal government and I notice a lot of other entities are giving major incentives to those organizations that are helping to continue to push the STEM agenda.
Yeah, it's really picked up in the last few years, and I think we did catch that wave early. I mean, there were signs when you talk to the technology companies, you can see, because I meet with some of the executives, and they bang their fists on the desk saying, we need 20 Java people, or we need a systems engineer. We can't find anybody. We can't find anybody here, so we have to outsource it to India or China. And so that's fine as well, but if the companies do want to hire people here, we want to employ. I mean, there's 8% unemployment we need to get.
Yeah, you can make a dent in that.
We can make a dent in that. So.
Yeah. Yeah, so in which areas is Georgia a leader in technology? I know you touched on a couple of items.
Yeah, we created, and one of our websites is wheregeorgialeads.com, and so we identified seven areas where we say Georgia ranks in the top five in the nation, typically measured by number of companies, amount of revenue generated, amount of jobs created.
Okay.
And those areas are health IT, which we now have 230 health IT companies in Georgia and growing. And there's this Michael Porter, a number of authors have done a lot of work on clusters.
Okay.
And so building these clusters produces more activity. So when you have a beginning of a cluster or a good cluster, there's a lot of co-opetition going on. There's mm-hmm. also a lot of talent in that space. So you can your company has a better chance of finding people, and it's just kind of the reputation about being in the area. So health IT, Financial technologies is another area. You know, that's the whole payment processing arena.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere along the lines of 75% of all payment processing flows through the state of Georgia.
Interesting.
And you think about it, there's Global Payments and TSYS and NCR and Equifax.
75% of all global?
All the nations.
America's yes.
Payments flow through the state of Georgia. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's so that's a big big area for us and one of the fastest growing areas. Quickly going through the other ones, there's communication services,
mm-hmm.
Information security, logistics technology, interactive marketing, and then what we call mission critical facilities or data centers. There's
okay.
a lot of data centers in this area because we have a good broadband and fiber.
Backbones.
Yeah, and there's less likelihood for the big earthquake disasters and hurricanes and things like that. So those are seven. And what we try to do is from a government-facing standpoint is say, look, Governor Deal, if you're going to invest, you have a dollar to invest, look at these areas where we lead
mm-hmm.
and apply more to that because those are your potential growth areas. And the governor, lieutenant governor, and a lot of leaders are picking up on that theme now, as you said, and you're starting to read it in the national level. We interviewed Steve Case, founder of AOL,
right.
At Venture Atlanta this year. I had the opportunity to do that, and he's spending a lot of time encouraging the nation and government to focus more on entrepreneurs, focus more on technology, because it's something like 75% of all jobs within the next 10 years are going to require some type of technology background to be able to fill the job. So it's a key area. I saw that the governor the other day picked two or three areas where they're going to give more money to the Hope Scholarship, and that was driven by some of the needs. I like what he's doing. I would have liked more in some of the areas like a health IT. I think he picked nursing, trucking, and one other area to start with. But hopefully that'll expand. We had been encouraging that for a few years. When you think about, not to get too far off
mm-hmm.
derailed here, but the Hope Scholarship, for example, you could be in any discipline and go to school here, and if you maintain that
with
B average.
With the grades.
With the grades, you're going to get the same amount.
Right.
So unlike a business that would say, we have this need, so let's apply more of the money to these areas, so we're going to give 95% if you go into one of the STEM areas, and 75% if you don't, well, that's going to drive people's thinking, particularly parents that are going, you should probably think about computer science, as a major.
Yeah.
So, but it was nice to see that the governor's starting to move along those lines, and I think more of that will happen. There'll be a lot of political pressure to
correct.
To not do that, but it's something that will create some more people going into that area.
Well, you said something as you're talking to Tino, and I know I read it on your bio and also on the company's website, on TAG's website, which is that you're also an advocacy group.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And so political advocacy.
Yeah, we have a full-time lobbyist at the Capitol, and that's why most people listening won't know a C6 from a C3, but a C6 is a trade association that allows you to lobby.
Okay.
And so as a C6, we decided, after a trip actually to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, we took my board chairman there to visit a technology council similar to ours, and we asked our board, we said, what are the most valuable things that the Technology Council of Pittsburgh does for you? And almost all of them ranked advocacy as a top area. So we immediately came back and made a decision to hire a person in that area. And it's taking some time, but we're beginning to position the technology industry at the Capitol as an important industry. And we're always working on some projects. So this year we're working on getting the renewal of the angel tax credit,
okay,
which will be important for people that want to invest in those angel companies. And then secondly, there's a process beginning where there's a potential for $100 million venture fund
okay.
that would be funded by the state over a course of 5 years and then paid out to through a third party to venture funding organizations who will then only use those funds for Georgia companies. That'll do a couple things. One, it'll be be more money for those groups because we have a shortage in that area.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, it'll pull some more VC firms into Georgia because they're going to have to, if they want some of that money, they're going to have a person here, probably an office here. And
you need to have a presence.
They have to have a presence here. So there's some good potential for that. So those are two of our main things we're doing in the area of advocacy this year.
Okay, so talk a little bit about your key goals, TAG's key goals for 2013.
Okay, so we have five areas that we're focusing on. The first is connecting the community. That's sort of our staple. That's our foundational issue that when I came in, when you asked a member why they joined TAG, they'd say they want to network.
Well, okay.
I didn't feel like network was deep enough to say, okay, we have an organization, it's a networking organization. And so then we changed the word to productive networking. So there's a difference, you know, going out and passing a business card or actually having a conversation that's going to lead to getting a job, hiring someone, getting funding, having a strategic partnership. So we do all those things at TAG. We do that, and because I'm a president of another group, which we might get to talk about, I see these other technology organizations. One of our differentiators is we have 31 different special interest groups.
Okay.
And each of those groups are called societies, and they have their own boards, and then we staff those societies.
Understood.
And they drive content. So over the course of a year, there's 175 to 200 meetings from these groups. And the groups are like in functional areas like mobility is hot, information security, data governance, business intelligence, business process management, or their industry areas like health IT, fintech, some of the areas, logistics, manufacturing that we talked about, or their people areas like women in technology, entrepreneurs.
Yes.
And so that drives lots of ways where people can exchange knowledge and thought leadership. So that's one of the things. The goal there this year is to grow that, have more people participate, also to build it statewide. So we've opened up an office in Savannah and chapters in Macon, we call it Middle Georgia, Augusta, and now Columbus.
Okay.
So those chapters will start having activities as well. Some of them already are, like Savannah. And then also we're going to add two new societies. We're working on the newest one, so hot off the press here, is a retail technology society.
Hmm.
We have a lot of companies like Carter's, Macy's, Racetrack, Popeyes, Church's, Arby's, to just name a few, that are all interested in technology from a retail setting. And all these softwares and IT areas are different in terms of how companies and service providers to those areas have to approach that particular domain. So that'll be one. And then later in the year, we're probably going to start one for programmers and developers because we don't really have anything for people that are interested in .NET and Java and a lot of the software or a lot of the technology, programmer technology. So
and that is a gap.
That's a gap.
Yeah.
We get people to say, hey, I'm a member, but there's not enough for me. So those are two things we'll do. So that's the connection piece.
Okay.
The next is celebration and recognition. So we have a number of events during the year that recognize leadership, whether it be people or companies. For example, at the summit, which I know we'll talk a little bit about, we have our top 40 innovative technology companies.
Right.
At the Excalibur Awards, we have companies that use technology to differentiate their business. We have the Southeastern Software Association Impact Awards, the Marketing Awards, the Diversity Awards. So during the course of a year, our goal is to be the go-to organization that's really going to hold on a pedestal, if you will, those organizations that are doing the best so that hopefully others
will
emulate that. Yeah.
And money can flow there as well.
And money can flow there.
Yeah.
The third we already talked about, and that's legislation, and I discussed a couple of those issues that we're focused on this year. We're also going to D.C., and we'll pick a few issues. We've got about 20 of our leaders flying to D.C. in February, and we'll talk to legislators there about things like patent reform, immigration reform, cyber attacks, cybersecurity, things that are really important to the technology industry.
Hmm.
Then we have a full-time PR director, and the goal there is to position Georgia as a leading technology state, and part of the way we measure that is which you're very familiar with, media impressions. So how many people are listening to the programs.
Exactly right.
What we're doing today counts as some media impressions. So that's all good. And then our final one is workforce. And we're still developing goals around that. But there's 4,000 jobs open right now in Georgia, technology jobs that are very difficult to fill. One of the reasons I'm on the Tech College System of Georgia board, foundation board, is because when we went out and interviewed companies all over the state last year as part of a legislative initiative called SR 68, we learned that when we talked to companies like Delta, we met with the head of engineering for Delta Airlines. We said, how many of your people need degrees from a Georgia Tech, as an example, a four-year school? Mm-hmm. And the way it broke down is pretty much 20% need the 4 years, and then 80% need some technology.
Okay.
Some people are calling some of this blue-collar technology, but the technologies that you could pick up as a programmer. Or
more just-in-time stuff versus a diploma.
Yeah.
Is that where you're going? Okay.
Yeah. And, well, even, you know, some of these, is it technology or not? But we went out to a company in Savannah, and we said, what's your number one need? They said, we can't find any qualified welders. You think welders today don't need technology, but if you're doing engine maintenance on a plant or welding in a big precision-based company, you're going to be needing that sort of thing. So we want to do a lot of work in terms of helping to fill that gap and get more kids through our TAG Education Collaborative on that path to technology.
Okay.
So those are some of the key external outcomes. At the end of the day, we should move up in the rankings in terms of matched up with other states. We're ranked about number 9 now in terms of total technology industry. We have about 20,000 technology companies.
Okay.
But we see ourselves moving up that rank, promoting the industry, doing more on a statewide basis. So we hit areas like Savannah and Columbus.
Some of the outstate areas.
Yeah. Hit that legislative agenda hard and try to impact the workforce area. So those are some of the key.
Well, very good. Thank you for taking us through that. So we're talking today with Tino Montella. He's the president of TAG, the Technology Association of Georgia. And Tino's been around for quite a while in terms of leading organizations, and particularly volunteer-driven organizations, such as the National Arthritis Foundation and the YMCA of Metropolitan Chicago. So we spent a little bit of time talking with Tino earlier about his background and also the background and initiatives that TAG is focused on for this coming year. And so now we'll kind of pivot a little bit over to what Tino thinks about leadership, global leadership, local leadership, et cetera. So, Tino, how do you define leadership?
Well, some people say it's the ability to get things done through and with other people. I think that's a good definition. What I've tried to do over the years is I enjoy driving the agenda. So I think in a lot of organizations, like we have a large board, as you and I were discussing offline, 65 members. Some people cringe when I say that because they say, I'm challenged with like 6 members. What do you do with 65?
It's almost like leading a parade when you've got 65 members.
And I said there's some magic to have my board be listening in on this, but some magic to have a larger board because they all know that they can't make all the decisions because there's so many of them. If you have a board of 6, they think they can make all the decisions. So I like when I go into a meeting, I will say, and I tell my staff to give this to me when they come in with an issue. Don't come in and say, what do you think I should do, or I have a problem. It's here's the problem, here's the cause of the problem, here's the possible solutions, and here's the one I recommend, and here's why. So we use pretty much that principle. I probably lean towards a little bit with a staff of now 25, so much smaller than the 4,500 I had in the Y, but it's an interesting challenge to have 25 because it's large enough where you're expected to do all of it, but it's also large where it's starting to get to the point you can't do it. You have to start to delegate and get out. So
correct.
I have a little bit of a propensity towards making sure I know a little bit about everything.
Mm-hmm.
Some people might say micromanagement, but I think it's a positive micromanagement that the leader of the organization knows what's happening within the company, if you will, within the organization. And that I'm providing good counsel. I spend a lot more time with people that start with me in the organization their first year in. And to some degree, they have to earn my confidence and my comfort level to have them go off and continue to grow. And we've been fortunate to have some really good staff that have stayed with me. I have a couple. One comes to mind that started as an intern at Georgia Tech, and has had been with me now 6 years and been promoted several times. Now she has a vice president title. And so the people that – not everybody likes the style or the direction. I think sometimes people perceive if you're in a nonprofit that you're going to be moving slowly.
Right.
And usually they come in the first week and they say, I can't believe I have all these different things to do. You know, I said, you have to be a real good multitasker for an organization like TAG. So we kind of press the envelope. There's – like people will be thinking about career. There's no 9-to-5 jobs if you're coming in. We don't want clock watchers. We really want people that'll stay through, get the job done, feel proud about it. One of the things I'm proud about kind of from my YMCA experience, as I looked around the country now in the Y, there's about a half a dozen leaders of the biggest Ys in the country that it somewhere along the line worked for me, which
wow.
Now I don't credit that. There might be some things that they're doing that probably they could blame me for, but you know, it's, I think it's good that they have taken some of the things that they did with me and brought it on to that, you know, leading the movement now.
Right, which is very impressive. So I know in getting to know you, I was impressed with the size and the scope of the organizations you've led. I mean, that's a little different mindset, right? I mean, sometimes people really are not at ease with much more than having one or two people report to them.
Right.
Here, you felt very at ease, or at least got to a point where you felt at ease with quite a few people reporting to you, and now backing down to 25.
Right.
So what advice and tips can you provide our listeners on how to lead large teams?
Well, I think particular of interest to what we do might be the standpoint of the volunteer. So let me start there.
Okay.
Because if you kind of envision, we have 31, soon to be 32 special interest groups that are all volunteers. So you have 32 different groups, plus my board, plus the TAG Education Collaborative Board. So when it's all totaled up, and then there's a lot of committees, maybe there's 50 different volunteer groups that we're trying to move ahead. And, you know, I think it's probably for the listeners, and some have probably been through this, I think I took some lumps at the Arthritis Foundation, because when I was running the Y in Chicago, it was one corporation.
Okay.
So, in effect, everybody reported to me indirectly. We had branches and vice presidents and all, but indirectly, at the end of the day, we'd encourage and participate and influence, but the bottom line was if they didn't do it my way, it could be the highway for them. So when I went into the Arthritis Foundation, I had 55 chapters around the country, and they all had their own presidents and CEOs and boards, and they didn't report to me at the national level.
So it's more like what we call a matrix organization.
Yeah, very much like a matrix organization. McKinsey has done a couple studies on it back 10 years ago and said these should all be imploded. So I'm a big proponent of that. If there are people who are listening to the Arthritis Foundation, you should implode that organization. Well, I think they're making a lot of changes to it. But the challenge is that it's even though I thought I was a really good influencer when I had that other little tool in my toolkit where it's like, okay, you know, you have to do it this way. Now we've done all the – and if you don't have that tool, then that's a really test if you are a good influencer or not.
Understood.
You know, how much time do you spend getting your groups together? It's kind of like politics. You know, how do you – is one of the rubs on President Obama is he spending enough time, you know, with the Congress, and is he getting enough stakeholders, and, you know, how's that all working? And I watch that. I mean, it's interesting to observe because I know how difficult
it is,
that is,
right?
And it's not, it's an art more than the science. But one of the things is that you – with these volunteer groups, you have to spend time cultivating them, telling what your expectations are up front, getting their buy-in. But also there's going to be times when they want to go off the reservation for whatever reason, and they've come up with some great idea of where they're going to fly two people in from India to be speakers. I'm exaggerating the point. For, you know, to come to an event, it's going to cost, you know, X amount of dollars. And we're saying, well, you know, thank you. That's something we don't do here because we're a nonprofit. We don't want to spend that money. Get them to volunteer their time if they're going to come in. So there's always those conversations. But as I coach my COO who has these societies and is doing a really good job with them, it's like sometimes you have to use collaborative. You know, there's four ways, as people talk about. You can win, lose, compromise, or collaborate. Win, lose is never usually the right answer. You don't want to set yourself up for that. Compromise generally isn't the right answer. Usually you try to come up with some way that's a collaboration. So we try not to say no to our volunteer groups. We try to say, here's a different way to think about that. You know, you want to fly someone in? Well, we generate a lot of frequent flyers using, you know, credit card over the year. We're happy if it's the right speaker and you get pre-approval to use that. So we don't want to spend the dollars on that because we have limited dollars. And the people that give us that money, sponsors and members, don't expect us to use
spend the money that way. That's correct.
So, you know, we work on things like that. From a staff standpoint, I think, you know, very similar. What I like to do is button up the goals and move it all the way through with performance standards, operating plans, incentive plans. And there's not a lot of shades of gray. So when we're talking to staff, they really know where they stand at any particular point in time. And I've been on the other side of organizations where, and you hear this a lot, you never quite know whether you're doing a good job or not. You never know at the end of the year whether you're going to be praised or, you know, be on probation. Mm-hmm. So at least with my team, I think if there was anything they'd say is they always know where they stand because we make the goals, and I have them make the goals very measurable. How many people are you going to have attend things? How many new things are you going to do? And it all leads back to the operating plan. So when I talked about connecting, they all have goals in connecting. They all have goals in celebrating. They all have goals in each of those areas.
Interesting. So basically what you're saying is with regard to large teams, it's really just a series of small teams.
Yeah.
And you just kind of attack it and work with it and develop people in that way.
Yeah.
And then of course, you give them enough experience of latitude after they have earned your confidence, of course, to then to take it and move forward with it, right, and put their stamp on it.
I think, and they take pride when they get more reach and more range, and at the end of the day, they get, you know, the gratification that they've actually accomplished things. So that's exactly right. With the volunteers, it adds another twist, but you never could look at the volunteers like, together, like we have 50 groups all together, it would be a monumental task. So, but you have to look at each one. They're all independent. They all have their own points of view, their own thinking. So I think my experience at the Arthritis Foundation helped me to come into TAG with a better perspective of, you know, working with volunteer groups. When you know, they have an option. They can just say, I'm not going to do this anymore.
Yeah. That's right. I'm not showing up tomorrow.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You aren't paying me anyways.
Yeah, right. What are you going to do? What are you going to do at that point? It's not right. Many options. You'll find another volunteer, I think.
And, Tino, that's exactly what happens with our executive MBA program.
Yeah.
You know, we have a group of people that are mid-career professionals and executives that come into a program, and they're put on an intact team on day one.
Right.
And so they don't get to choose a team. Right, and we make sure that these teams are evenly diversified with regard to ideas, thoughts, gender, et cetera, functional areas, and then we have them work together for the next 18 months.
Yeah,
and they are not allowed to move between teams. So, in essence, they are self-directed teams, or what I call teams of volunteers.
Yeah,
you can't make someone do something. That's why it's called influence, right?
Right.
You know,
right.
And so pretty interesting. So, in your opinion, Tino, how important is it for employees, colleagues, and leadership to be lifelong learners?
Yeah, I mean, I think places like Kennesaw are great opportunities. We have as part of our performance standards, again, a measurable goal that each person has to take so much training during the year. And I know that's not a unique perspective on running an organization, but...
But it may be for a nonprofit organization.
It might be for some of the nonprofits. Okay. I mean, I think a lot of the nonprofits, you know, see that importance for growth. There's a number of avenues in the nonprofit world to take on more experience. Particularly in technology where things are changing so fast. And one of our new goals this year is we probably have 500 sponsors now, all different shapes and sizes.
Quite impressive list.
Yeah,
I've noticed. That's impressive.
And it's about half of our budget is sponsorship, so it's really important. Well, one of the things we said to our staff is you really need to know something about each of those sponsors. Hmm. So if, the moment of truth is somebody says, yeah, tell me about XYZ, what they do, at least you have enough information to be able to give them the overview of the organization. That the sponsors want us to be able to do that. It's important for the staff to know how to do that. So, I mean, that's a learning in itself. So, we're printing out the front page, Google each website and print out the top page, the about page of the sponsors. And then we're also having sponsors come into our staff meetings. And that's going to start this year. And just spend 15 minutes saying, here's what we do.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, but it's a good learning. So there's a lot of different ways to learning. There's the educational route, the traditional route, which is extremely important. And then there's just, life in the lane of a nonprofit organization.
Yeah, PhD in life.
Yeah,
right. Okay. So in your opinion, what are the leadership skills that you notice that most leaders or wannabe leaders are missing?
Wow, that's a really good question. I think that part of it is having a desire and a passion to be the best. I mean, that may not sound totally politically correct, but I think, we look at things, we say, we want to do a good job for the community, but also who are we matching up against? So how are we doing compared to our fellow nonprofits that are in the same industry? What are we doing to really excel? In the nonprofit world, I think there's a fear of making a change.
Okay.
I had a little business for three businesses for a while, and one of the businesses was called Motivational Messaging. And what we were doing was we were pioneers. We were very early in the process of going into a nonprofit and saying, that mail that you're sending, we all get it in the mailbox from great organizations like Special Olympics and the arts and other groups. We say, well, our kids, that next generation, they're not going to go to the mailbox, open the mail, read it, write a check to the organization, and mail it in. It's just, it's
too
faster.
Cumbersome.
Yeah, too cumbersome. So, what we were pitching was moving to an online video that we were creating that they could just go to the site, click on the video, watch a compelling message, click here to donate. And, a lot of organizations are doing it now.
Yeah.
And there was really a reluctance or reticence to move, to shift. And, the only thing I could see is it made every logical sense in the world, but it was just saying, well, I'm in a comfort zone right now. If I don't change, I'm still going to be okay for the next 5 years doing this. If I do this, it's an investment. I got to explain it to the board and all. So I think it's having the courage to be able to change, make those changes, particularly what I've experienced in the nonprofit is moving fast, doing your homework, and then making a decision that you're going to put yourself in front of the board. When I was in the Y, we started this major foster care program. Nobody thought of the Y being a foster care provider. We ended up being one of the largest foster care providers in the state. But it
Wow.
was my board was split on it. It's like, well, is that something we should do? And we just convinced them that it was a need. We were prepared to do it, and
You should take the lead on it.
Yeah, and
basically,
need to take the lead. We need to take the lead in that. We did that with a gang intervention program in Chicago when right after the Rodney King riots, Chicago had in one part of the city called Logan Square 16 gang-related murders in the summer before.
Wow.
And so the mayor, Daley, contacted several of us and said, we need some help in this. So I think I was new on the job in Chicago, maybe half a year in, and said, okay, the Y is going to take the lead. We got a whole several organizations together, and we created a program where fringe members of the gang, you never can get to the core. That's mm-hmm. really difficult, but they were actually taking graffiti, which they probably put on the buildings, off the buildings. And that summer, and it wasn't just because of this program, but there weren't any murders in that community. So
interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. So basically, I think I'm hearing you saying, of course, there needs to be more of an intense focus on metrics, and because if you can't measure it, you should perhaps shouldn't be doing it. And that is what some of these leaders are missing today. They love these feel-good ideas, and then they don't have anything to really measure how their impact. They need to be able to challenge and be pretty much okay with ambiguity. You know, tolerant for ambiguity is what we say. And they need to be open to change.
Right.
And need to move quickly.
Right.
And continue to apply the innovativeness. Did I miss anything?
No, that's good.
High level.
Of course, the technology industry, if you know, the quicker the dead, as I think Tom Peters or someone said, is, you know, there's only the quick and the dead. So, you know, they really have to move, shift quickly and understand. And when I see some of these successful nonprofits, I mean, it's for-profit entrepreneurial companies, and you've interviewed some of them, the original idea that they had when they started their company then 2 years out looks very different, right? Because
right.
those successful ones are kind of moving and shifting and making changes on the fly. I always like the theme Ready, Fire, Aim, although some people don't like that, but it's always served me well. But, you know, that you just have to go for it. I always say to staff, if you know, we're not going to get every piece of information. If we have enough information where we think we can make a decision, then we're going to make a decision. We're not going to wait and go back through it for another month when it needs to be made today. So I think Ready, Fire, Aim, there's still some truth to it. Probably certain times it gets you in trouble, but for the most part it works pretty well.
Well, you know what? You brought something up that I am a little remiss about, especially if your team's listening now. So please take a moment and brag on your team. If you like to go with names, that's fine.
Yeah, too. Yeah. Well, we have a great team. I mean, I'd like to say they all are really good, and they're doing a great job. Certainly, Billy Brandt, my CEO, and Amanda Henley, my VP, are doing great jobs. We have Michael Robertson that runs our TAG Education Collaborative Group, and his team is really smart and very enthusiastic about what they're doing. I have a great membership team, Brian Inman and all my membership relations staff. I have a great statewide person. It's just my legislative guy, my new PR person. So they're all really, really strong. You know, my goal is they're young, and they're one of the things about the TAG job, when since there's almost 19,000 members and 200 meetings, these staff are very visible, so they get scooped up every once in a while. So I probably shouldn't have mentioned any of those names on the radio to be calling tomorrow. But Richie Johnson out there, legislative, you know, we just have all in all a great team and a great support team.
Well, great. Thank you for doing that. And I'm sure they're smiling on the other end of the radio there. So as you look back over your career, Tino, what is it about your background that prepared you for what you're doing today, both personally and professionally?
Well, credit a lot to my parents. They're, fortunate to have two great parents growing up. That my dad was a self-made guy. He actually dropped out of school at 16 and joined World War II as early as he could. And he and five of his brothers all went into the war, and they all came back, which was a big issue in our town. They had a parade for them and all. So,
good stuff.
But they always encouraged us to really not stay in town, to go explore and travel and be the best that we could be. I apply a lot to sports, and I think particularly the wrestling. I had a great wrestling coach in college that I always admired for his discipline and his motivation. He would spend about a half hour in his office getting psyched up every day before he came into practice.
Wow.
And I used to watch that. And so, you know, a lot of times when I think, okay, you know, I got to get ready. I had a staff person that was a good staff person. He didn't really fit with my I'm very much an A personality. He was a B. There's your need for Bs as well. But he goes, I don't know. Every morning you seem like you come in and you have your chin strap on and you're ready to go. I'm like, he was saying it like wasn't sure about that. And I'm like, thank you. Thank you. That's really good.
You paid know, you so, a compliment.
Yeah,
right?
He paid me a big compliment. So I think family, some coaches, certainly my wife has been tremendous support, and my kids. So just a great family structure. So, and you know, that's a lot of it. And then learning by experience, like the good, the bad, and the ugly, like I said. So I think anybody listening that's younger and maybe has lost a job or is challenging their job, take it all as an experience. I had a guy I had lunch with today that was talking about how he spent 3 years building a company, and they had taken $3 million out from investors, and it didn't quite make it.
Okay.
And, you know, so my comment was him was, well, you moved on, right? You probably was a good experience after you got through that. And he goes, yeah, that was a really valuable experience. So you got to take those things and you know, make lemon out of lemonades, as they say, or lemonade out of lemons, better yeah. way to put it, yeah.
So failure is important. I mean, that does have some grounding there.
Yeah, and even in our office, you know, I mean, this theme of fail fast, so staff listening to that might say they never heard that. But, you know, I do think there's a theme of, okay, try it. If it doesn't work, at least you gave it your best shot. Show that you gave it your best shot. Make sure you have given it your best shot. And mm-hmm. then if it didn't work, we're not going to harp on that. We'll just move on to the next thing.
Yeah, and because the timing may be off.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so the fact that you run and have run some of the most prestigious volunteer-driven organizations, and you also mentioned in a few sentences ago that, you know, you have met with someone or some people over the years who perhaps lost jobs.
Yeah.
There's a space for people who are between jobs to get involved with a volunteer organization and continue to build a resume. Am I correct?
You're right. And one of the things I would say is, you know, get involved with an organization like TAG if you're interested in the technology world. One of the things is just to have time outside of your house, going out there learning, meeting people. A lot of times, as you know, people are heads down when they're in a job.
Mm-hmm.
So then if they lose a job or something happens, there's a layoff or whatever the reason, then they have no idea how to network. And, you know, stereotyping, if you're in the technology space, maybe there's more introverted personalities in some cases. So it's like, wow, I thought I was going to have this job forever, now I don't. So, you know, we really encourage them to get out, bring their business cards, meet people, be part of it, keep learning while they're out. And a lot of people, you know, find jobs through TAG. There are jobs open
mm-hmm.
out there, just particularly in the technology space.
Well, and I think the point that we're making here is that not all jobs pay.
Right.
And, but
yeah.
In terms of monetary, right? And
yeah.
Because we have... the EMBA Recurring Knowledge Alumni Organization, Mark Ryan heads that group up. The bottom line is that this is a group of
right.
concerned alumni from the Executive MBA
yeah.
Program who get together and kind of work together, network, et cetera. And those people who volunteer in that area, they don't get monetary payment, but
right.
they should be getting some fulfillment out of that.
Yeah, I see. I don't know if it's a new trend. You may know better than I, given where you stand in your career with the university. But a lot of kids now during the summer will contact us, and they're looking for an experience. And they'll work for, you know, some people can't afford to do that, but they'll work for no pay just to be able to put that on their resume. And there's a couple good books out on that. I don't know the names of them, but I heard somebody being interviewed recently on one of the TV shows that has written a book on how many internships she had through college that were not paid, but just to get those things under her belt. And I tell you, when I'm looking at resumes, somebody out of school, I'm going to be looking at, you know, if they've had any experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah.
And what kind of experiences they've had, too,
and what kind,
too,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. What
okay.
kind, you know, I mean, there's, I think if you get into a company or an organization like a TAG, that you can put a lot, have a real life experience and be able to do that. In the summer, for those listening, we have an internship program for rising high school seniors
mm-hmm.
With the idea that these are kids that already have an interest in STEM, and what we want to do is give them a real life experience so there's a chance for them to hopefully solidify their idea of going on to a 2-year, 4-year, or post-grad work in one of the STEM areas. And those are actually paid. So our goal this summer is to place 120 rising high school seniors in technology-related jobs. So anybody listening that wants to know about that, they can contact our office.
That's perfect. And they are paid. Wow, that's
paid,
impressive.
The company pays them $1,000 for a five-week experience.
Experience. Interesting.
And the kids are good. My executive director of that program says that these aren't the type of kids you're just going to go send out to get coffee for you. They're actually, you know, they told a story about one of the companies where one of the young people were working for, I think it was a Turner or big company. And they said, we need you to develop all these organizational charts. So came over and looked at her desk, and she wasn't moving, didn't look like she was doing the organizational charts. He goes, "Do you have any trouble with this?" She goes, no. She says, "I'm developing a JavaScript where all of this is going to happen for you, you know, automatically after that." And the guy's like, "Oh, okay, well, that's really good. I didn't know you could do that." You know, so, I mean, they're really good kids that are smart, and they're going to end up probably at, you know, going on to
leadership positions in other organizations.
Yeah.
That's a great point. So what is Tino Montella doing to ensure that he continues to grow and develop as a leader?
Well, this job is definitely gives me an opportunity to pick up a lot of information. This morning, there was a gentleman who's written several books on cyber attacks, and he's worked for three presidents. So I sat in on that. So I'll pick my own meetings. Either I'm going to go introduce the speaker, or I'll just go because I want to hear what the topic is. So that keeps me really busy, and then. Again, I say on the good days because some days I don't do it, but usually I have an audio book. Even though I'm a technology president, I still use the audio books versus the iPods. But I enjoy them. I'm usually looking because I live in Johns Creek and work in Midtown. I'm usually listening to an audio book on the way in or out of the office. So it's about 35-minute, 40-minute drive. Mm-hmm. So if on a good week, I can get through a book at least a week, and it's usually an autobiography of you know, someone I'm enjoy hearing about. So something history, always no all nonfiction stuff. So,
right.
And so I feel like I'm learning in and out, in addition to jumping in, and I don't have time to pick up a book and actually read it from cover to cover. So listening to the books, my wife is a writer and a big reader. So she tells me sometimes it doesn't count, but you know, I do get through a lot of books, and I, you know, depending on traffic and if I'm daydreaming, I actually can absorb some of the information, but listen to, you know, The World is Flat, Thomas Friedman. And
yeah,
some of them are difficult, like Einstein's theory of relativity. I didn't think I was getting that, but when you're driving and then he's saying when the train goes this far, how, you know, he gets into some really the theory of relativity. I'm like, I'm not going to be able to pick this up on the audiobook.
Yeah, but it's good at least to be introduced to it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So we've been spending time with Tino Montella. He's the president of TAG, and since September 2004, and he's amassed about 20 years of experience leading two of the nation's most prestigious volunteer-driven organizations. And so we've been spending time getting a little bit of insight on the man behind the leader, what he's been doing in terms of technology enablement through TAG, the Technology Association of Georgia, and what his thoughts are around leadership. So the thing I think we're winding up and getting to the end of this, because I know Tino's a very busy man, we wanted to talk about one of the signature events he has coming up. So, Tino, if you don't mind talking about the biggest TAG event of the year, the Georgia Technology Summit.
Yeah, thanks for giving me that opportunity. I'm excited. The volunteers that have been involved with helping to put this together, and some of them have been actually participating for the 9 years we've had this event on the summit committee, tell me that they think this is the best lineup we've ever had. So this is a place where, again, we can celebrate and recognize the community. We recognize TAG's top 40 innovative companies, and they're all producers of technology. And the top 10 actually get a chance to have 3 minutes on the stage in front of hopefully 1,500 people to tell their story. Additionally, another celebration piece is that we do a Hall of Fame recognition award. And so we, PricewaterhouseCoopers brought this idea to us, and they're a partner on this particular program. And this year we have the co-founder of WebMD, Jeff Arnold,
okay,
is going to be recognized, you know, great name in the community. And then I get to deliver the State of the Industry Report, which I always look forward to do. Or we do a lot of primary and secondary research each year, and then we try to capture it and capsulize it into like a 20-minute presentation about what's happening in the technology industry. And then the hallmark is the theme is always around innovation being in Georgia's DNA, and we find speakers that tie into that theme. This year we decided the theme should be the commerce revolution, innovation in every interaction. And the initial idea, although it's broadened behind that, is I'll use the word a walletless world. So 10 years from now, there's not a lot of people going to be exchanging cash. You're going to use your mobile phone and go to a QR code and buy your opera tickets or buy your groceries. And so, you know, how is that all changing? How are companies adapting to it? So we have the CTO, the Chief Technology Officer for Visa.
Okay.
Matt Quinlan is the first time he's actually come into town to our knowledge to speak. And we thought, you know, given Visa,
that's
major
impressive
organization, he's going to be all over that topic and thinking about how it affects his business and industry. And then we also have the founder, Bob Metcalf, of the Ethernet. And one of the staff said, yeah, that's that little blue cord that goes into your computer. But, you know, a huge invention. And he also started 3Com. So he's coming up from Texas to speak. And then one of our keynoters is Ray Kurzweil.
Kurzweil Computer.
Yeah, written a number of books, The Synthesizer.
The one that Stevie Wonder actually used was a Kurzweil.
Yeah, that's right. And he has another book on how he feels like there's nothing stopping people to live to 150 years, talks about different ways that we're moving towards that with science, technology, and herbal kinds of medicines. He just became the director of engineering for Google. So it's interesting that Google hired a real futurist for that job. I think that was and so we may be one of his first official talks since he's taken over that role. So you have Kurzweil, Metcalf, Quinlan, and Jeff Arnold, and the top 40 innovative technology companies. So people can contact our office, go to the tagonline.org website, or contact our office at 404-817-3333 to get more information about the summit. A lot of companies are buying tables of 10,
right.
So they're bringing either their clients or their customers or their employees to
right.
come out and hear that. Because, you know, talking about a great day of learning, when you go through that, you're going to have a real good sense of innovation in every interaction and where that's headed.
Yeah, and hopefully there's an opportunity for Global Leader Radio to actually come in and perhaps
we'd love
get
to
a
have
spot.
You guys there, and it is March 20th. I think I'm not sure if we said that, so March 20th, and it'll be at the Cobb Galleria, and it'll start. People start actually gathering 6:30 in the morning,
wow.
And then the program actually starts at 8. But the booth will be set up before that, the 40 exhibit booths for the top 40 companies, and then that'll run to about 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, I tell you what, Tino, my friend, time really flies
by.
Yeah,
it did.
And, you know, based on what we've been talking about for the last hour or so, it must be great to be Tino Montella these days.
It's I'm fortunate to be in a job, I guess, the right place at the right time. But it's I feel good about where the organization is heading, where Georgia is heading as a technology industry, and the team of volunteers and staff, great board and staff, and all these leadership councils and societies that help make TAG move forward.
Oh, fantastic. So now we get to the final question of our time together. We'll make both this audio and the video of your response to this question available on our web posting. So, Tino, which book has most impacted your leadership ability?
Well, I'm going to cheat on this a little bit, and you know, I was even prepared to answer it. But you know, the books that have most influenced me are autobiographies about some of our presidents: Teddy Roosevelt, Franklin Roosevelt, John Kennedy, and Harry Truman. Those are four books, autobiographies or biographies, not always autobiographies, that I've read about them. And I think with each one of those, you know, these guys had obviously. You know, very challenging times. Lincoln, of course, I think is most noted during the Civil War and bringing people through that. Truman having to drop the atomic bomb and just the buck stop with him and being a tough guy. Teddy Roosevelt, kind of a swashbuckler who really brought us into that next century. And then John F. Kennedy and Mrs. Kennedy and that whole period of time with the Cuban Missile Crisis. And so what I like to listen to are those points that, you know, those tough decisions that they had to make, how they made them. They weren't always great decisions. When Kennedy came into pretty early on in his administration, they had the Bay of Pigs issue, which I think probably most people would say big failure. He was pretty depressed over, you know, making those decisions, took the wrong advice, didn't win on that score. But then he became much more prepared
to handle the next large
Khrushchev to back down on the during the missile crisis. So to me, those are the things that I enjoy. You know, I like those. I think learning from some of the leaders that have gone through those difficult times, it just helps prepare me for not saying that any kind of comparison, the kinds of decisions we make, but a lot of them are the same principles.
Right.
The moments of truth when you have to do something and, you know.
Somebody has to make a decision.
Right.
And it's important stuff.
Right.
So if we were to press you on one of those four presidents, which one would it be?
Oh, man. Well, I think Lincoln, just because there's nobody that went through a period like Lincoln, and he had to kind of take us through that whole the period. There's a new book out called Killing of Lincoln, which is actually an interesting bestseller, and I just finished listening to that. But I've read a couple of the books on him, and it's just you always pick up something, but any of the Lincoln books. But the last one I read was and they have a little bit about the end of the Civil War in there and the John Wilkes Booth and how that all transpired until the end. But and then the movie has just come out as well, which is also, I think, the leader, the stars in that did a really good job in terms of portraying that that man and the period of time that he had a lead. I don't think anybody's really had that. Of course, Franklin Roosevelt, another one, but probably nothing like trying to bring the country together and, you know, wrong decision and who knows where we'd be right now.
Yeah, so we're settled on Lincoln.
We're settled on Lincoln.
Got it.
Pick one, it's Lincoln. You press me and I'm saying Lincoln. Sticking with it.
Oh, so Tino, on behalf of our learning community, we've learned a lot from you and certainly appreciate you accepting our invitation to join
us
today.
Thanks for having me.
And so I'd love to have you back on the show sometime. We can work it out and things are going
okay.
Well. I'd love to hear a little bit about how the summit went as well.
Oh, great.
So with that in mind, I know you gave us some numbers before, but could you tell us how our learning community can contact you either by email or phone or both?
Yeah. Well, my direct line is tmantella@tagonline.org, and our general line in the office is 404-817-3333. We have a few websites. We have our tagonline.org website, which has all the calendar of events on it and really the place where you can find the activity. There's another site called tagthink.com, and that's a place that's very interactive. So you can blog on there. You can put press releases on there. And then I mentioned we have the WhereGeorgiaLeads.com that has the seven areas where we have a leadership position. And so those are three of the main ones. The last one is the StateOfTheIndustryReport.com. So each year the State of the Industry is put up on the site. And there's about 250 pages of information on that.
Okay, well, good. You're going to give me a little counsel after we finish and tell me where I should link to, because we're going to put your bio on our blog posting.
Okay.
And that bio will be able to point to several things, and we'll be able to talk about how you'd like that represented.
Okay.
So that when our listeners can podcast and listen to it on a drive in from Johns Creek to Midtown.
That's right. That's right.
You can enjoy that. So.
Right.
So as far as we're concerned here today, that would be it for this edition of Global Leader Radio. And we invite all our listeners to check our web presence for previous interviews and links to valuable leadership resources, especially this one. You gave us a ton of tips here, Tino.
Oh, good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So also, please drop me an email at acm0996@kennesaw.edu if you have recommendations for guests. So for those of you interested in our award-winning executive MBA program, please go to the EMBA icon on our Global Leader Radio site to connect with us and sign up for an information session. So join us again at this same location for the next edition of Global Leader Radio, the show that discusses ideas that matter with people who care. So have a great week.
Global Leader Radio is brought to you by the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University. Take charge of your personal development and professional career today by learning more at KSUEMBA.com. And join us next week as we discuss ideas that matter with people who care.